right, I think we can go ahead and get started. If we get out a little bit early, then the coolest place might be the pool. Maybe there's some shade of the building. I'm going to sit for a minute, if y'all don't mind. But we're a small group. It's a bigger breakout in the other room. And generally that means I have got clerks from smaller courts that haven't dealt with jury trials very often and need to know, yikes, what happens if defendants requested a jury trial. I know I've got Anna in here and El Paso, so I don't know. If you wouldn't mind, let's go around the room, and I would like you to introduce yourselves, tell me where you're from, and what type of experience you have in with jury trials, if you haven't had any jury trials, if you've got your first one on the docket, or Galveston, you've had plenty. So let's start up here, and if you would go around the room and introduce yourselves. That's so smaller city than I'm giving you credit for. Pass around this microphone. So you've had one jury trial in mm-hmm. Dickinson?
We always have people say, I want to trial by jury, but they make them go to pretrial first.
Okay, good technique, going to pretrial. So your prosecutor visits with them before you go to trial. Okay, and a lot of them fall out. Once defendants hear about deferred or DSC, discretionary DSC, You're going to lose a lot of them. Okay.
My name is Jacqueline Harper from El Paso Municipal Court. I'm the office manager, and we have 2 days out of the month, Thursday and Friday, the last Thursday and Friday of the month, that are set aside for jury trials. However, we don't have that many, and I'm in here because of the mechanics of impaneling a jury. I just want to be a little bit more familiar with that because I don't work with it as the office manager, but I do have our senior court clerk here who does, and so I'm going to pass the mic to her.
Okay. I'm surprised y'all only have 2 days a month for jury trials in El Paso. Of course, y'all are a court of record.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
That's
all right.
Correct.
Go ahead.
My name is Terry Corral. I'm a senior deputy court clerk. And, yes, I am in charge of the jury service. Lucky me. We, on an average, for 1 day, we order 400 jurors. 200 in the morning, 200 in the afternoon. So if it's 2 days, it's 800 jurors. And if we need more, we'll order more. We need less, depending on how the calendar looks.
Where do you get your, I'll move the microphone back. Where do you get your jurors, your juror pools from? Oh, that's that. This is a first for me, hearing that a private company handles getting your jury pools together. Voter Registrar's Office. I bet you most of y'all do it that way.
Okay. My name is Crystal, and I'm from South Lake, and I work with the juveniles, so and we're in teen court, so I don't really see jury trials that often, but I do want to make sure that I am familiar with the process. So,
okay. We've all been called to fill in or assume additional duties in court, haven't we?
Okay. Well, my name is Edminia Dale, and I'm from Flatonia, a very small town, mm-hmm. and we haven't had any jury trials. And normally, we just have the pre-trials, and that's where it normally stops.
Yeah. South of San Antonio? I know, yeah. I've driven through Flatonia.
Yes, yeah. We're between San Antonio, Houston, up I-10.
Oh, okay. All right. I have not gotten a ticket there. You know, I'm not trying to get one in every county, but driving to, I got one on the way to Tyler last year. Okay.
My name is Martha Gasca. I'm a senior deputy court clerk with the El Paso Municipal Court. My court does have jury trials. Maybe we probably schedule maybe like 3 or 4 a month, but sometimes, you know, they'll get, you know, maybe they'll settle with the city prosecutors ahead of time. Maybe we'll have one a month that goes.
Okay, that's still, well, being a court of record, you know, we don't have that trial de novo in county court, so that I bet you that has cut down on your numbers.
My name is Nerfy Garcia, and I'm a court clerk for the city of Anna. We're a small town, but we have one day out of the month that we set for any jury trials that they request. Usually those get settled in the pretrial phase, so we maybe have one a month, maybe.
One a month?
Yeah.
Okay. You have trouble getting a jury pool together? How big is Anna? That's impressive, yeah.
My name is Dora Garcia Ruiz. I'm from Plainview. Been there as a court clerk for the last 3 years. We've had 2 trials since I've been there. And I'm somewhat familiar with setting one up. I've assisted, but I just wanted to get a little bit more familiar.
Okay.
Debbie Reiser from Castroville. I've been court clerk for about 13 years. We do about 4 jury trials a year, so... that's about it.
Wow, 4. Okay. Castroville, that's a pretty good-sized town, isn't it?
No. It's about 10 miles west of San Antonio. We have a population of about 2,669.
Okay. About?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It is 2,669,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's growing. Yeah. So.
My name is Modesto Vasquez, court administrator for the city of San Benito, past 7 years. One jury trial, and they worked it out before we went to trial. We do have a lot of pretrials and a lot of bench trials.
Okay, a lot of bench trials.
Yeah.
All right. So your prosecutor doesn't solve every outstanding case. I want you to know your judge was just in. We've added a court cost and administration class for judges. It's not well attended because you all are handling all this, but your judge was there. So quiz him on court cost.
My name is Patricia Carrillo. I'm here from El Paso. I'm from the municipal courts, and I'm a senior office assistant. I really don't actually do anything on the jury trials. I just help, like, sometimes in mailing out the jury trial letters. But
mm-hmm. Well, now you'll know why we're doing this. Well, I'm glad to know more people from El Paso. This is my first year being out here and need to draft some West Texas folks to teach for me.
My name is Laura Nunez, and I also work for the El Paso Municipal Court, but I've never been to a jury trial.
Okay. I'm going to do a court visit before I leave here, and sit in. If you don't do jury trials, if that's not in your job description, it's really interesting. Especially pro se defendants, you never know what they're going to say or how it's going to go. And the same goes for attorneys.
I'm Vicki Youngblood. I'm from El Paso also. I'm a senior deputy court clerk. Terry Corral does all the work.
Yes, but Terry Terry may go on vacation, right?
Yeah, it's just...
Okay.
Well, yeah, we go in after the fact and sit there and run the recording equipment and wait till it's over.
Okay.
And most of them take a while. When it comes down, they take a while because they really wanted that jury trial because mm-hmm. Almost all of them are settled.
I bet you don't have many pro se defendants since you're a court of record. And if you want to know, does it go both ways? Okay.
Some of them we know them. You know.
Regulars?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, repeat customers, as Rob would say, yeah. Right.
I bless them every time I send them court.
My name is Latrice Johnson. I'm from the city of Coppell, Coppell Municipal Court. Mm-hmm. I'm the administrative support supervisor. I'm actually over the juries, but I don't actually impanel them anymore. Someone else under me does that. So I'm here trying to find out if there's something else that we should be doing that we're not doing, or, you know, if there's something new out there.
All right, well, it's pretty much geared to basics. I don't know what's new. I guess it's getting harder to find jurors. That's my experience.
My name is Grace Martha. I'm from Van Horn, the court over there. I'm a court clerk, and we haven't had any jury trials since I've been a court clerk. And so I need to know what, because we have one defendant that wants a jury trial.
Right,
so
that's where my class is. They've requested a jury trial. Here you are. Yeah. Well, good. Thanks for sharing that. And I think that for those of you who are about to have your first jury trial, draw on the people that have had one or two that can share experience of this went wrong, this went right, this was problematic. So, keep in touch with your fellow clerks, and they are, I have a list of clerks that are on my speed dial that I've, when you get tough procedural questions or how do you do this, then you're the ones that deal with it. And so share each other's resources. Is anybody here on the listserv? Did I mention this in a class already? What class was it? That was me, probably. The listserv. Ask Hope if you've got questions like this. And administrative listserv, court administrators, and clerks listserv. Hope@tmcec.com. And she will get you on the listserv, and you can shoot those questions out to clerks around the state. You're way out in Van Horn, so if you've got a small city your size, you can ask that question. All right, well, let's get to it. Here, what we our objectives are is to know what statutes to go to pertaining to impaneling a jury, and what are different methods that we can use to comply. And then we're going to go over what we just learned. This is Hilda Culberson is on our board of directors. She's the court administrator for Bryan. She teaches this class. She is not here because she short staffing layoffs. So I'm finding that my faculty is being cannibalized because your courts aren't letting you get away. But, you know, the judge says jump, and sometimes we jump. All right, so don't worry. Be happy. It's not so bad. All right, so when the jury trial is going to be held, does the defendant have to have an attorney? Well, you know, we have the right to represent ourselves. We have the right in the Constitution. You can represent yourself. There are instances we've seen on court TV and the news where you've got someone charged with a felony, and they're so disruptive. And they're just, I don't know, a Ted Kaczynski type where the judge will say, yank, you're out of here. I'm appointing an attorney to represent your case. But in municipal court, we do have pro se defendants. They have a right to represent themselves. Now, here's an issue I've dealt with. I don't know if I gave you any of my background. I've been a municipal judge in two cities and a prosecutor in one city. I have four children, so I've been a defendant, a defense attorney, representing those miscreants. But so I've worked with them, and one thing that has come up with me is, did I lose a slide? No. In summoning a jury, we're from a small town, and we have trouble getting a jury panel together. We're 2,000 in Liberty Hill. I have been through certain streets twice. I've had every council member in, which was a good and bad thing, not so much. But that may be a problem for you if you start having a lot of jury trials. El Paso, you've got a pretty good pool. And who said that they had pretty good? You did. With you get good responses to your jury summons. So, proceedings in court, we talked about they do have a right to an attorney. It's a public trial, again, guaranteed by the Constitution. Defendants have a right to a speedy trial. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean we've got to do it within a year? Do we have to do it within 6 months? For those of you that have smaller cities, you're not going to have jury trials requested very often. in Liberty Hill, what we would do is set, we've gotten to the point where it's every month now, but we would do it every 3 months. So speedy trial does not mean that it has to be done within a certain time. Years ago, the legislature passed a statute and said, well, you've got to do it within X number of days. That was found to be unconstitutional. So this is something that your judge is going to have to do on a case-by-case basis to decide if your defendant has his right or her right to a speedy trial has been violated. We find these in the Constitution and in the Code of Criminal Procedure. The right to a jury trial is inviolate, meaning, say you've got a defendant who has requested a couple continuances, they have set their case for jury trial, and they stand you up. They're arrested on a warrant, they come back in and they say, I want a jury trial. Do you have to give them a jury trial? They've been set before your court 3 times. They've stood you. You do. And that's baffling. You've set it for court. You've maybe summoned your jury panel. The right to a jury trial is inviolate. Now, that doesn't mean you can't charge them with failure to appear, violate promise to appear, additional court cost for failing to do that. But they have to be convicted, and if they want a jury trial, you've got to provide that for them.
When I was student studying, and it made it sound like, okay, the jury trial is inviolate, which means that is their, when they come to court, that is their right to have a jury. It almost made it sound like, unless they ask for a bench trial or a pre-trial, that is their right to have a jury trial.
That's right. And I'm misstating something, if I'm confusing you there, that if they don't plea, they send in a request, plead not guilty. Sometimes they refuse to plea. Then what your default, they have to request a trial before the court. Your default setting is jury trial. So that's correct. If they haven't requested a trial before the court, then if they've pled not guilty, you're going to set them for a jury trial.
So when they come in and we sign them up for an arraignment, are they they're waiving their right to they're not waiving their right to a jury trial, they're just kind of like a...
If they come in for arraignment, look
when
at...
When they come in and they want a court date, that's just to go before the judge to tell them, give them their plea of guilty, not guilty. If they plead not guilty, then they're set up for a pretrial, then they're set up for a jury trial. That's how it works?
Well, it doesn't... Some courts don't set a pretrial. That's a better procedure to have the prosecutor take a look. Any of you in your courts have a prosecutor that looks at the file the minute they walk into the courtroom, that they haven't briefed it, they're going cold? I think that's a practice in a lot of courts. So if it's a case without merit and they've requested a jury trial, then and your prosecutor hasn't reviewed it, then you've wasted some folks' time. The prosecutor, this has happened to me, that the prosecutor looks and, well, the video doesn't support the charge, and so they ultimately dismiss or plea something out. But meanwhile, we've got folks who have taken off work, and so a pretrial is the best procedure. Now, I didn't answer one part of your question. You do have a right to set pretrial settings. That is your right. Your judge, you can establish local rules. But most of you, I bet, have a plea form. They've got to appear within 30 days, some say 2 weeks. You don't on your form, I plead not guilty. I plead guilty and request or no contest and request DSC. So if you've got that, that's where they're entering their plea. And if they plead not guilty, then somewhere on your form, and if they don't do it, then you're going to set them for an arraignment. They're going to tell the judge, I plead guilty, I plead not guilty, I plead no contest. If they don't do that, the judge sets them up for a jury trial. You can set it up for the arraignment, which you've done, and you can set it a mandatory. So say they want a jury trial, but they're not going to mess. They don't have any pretrial motions or anything. The judge can make that mandatory. This is a mandatory appearance, and if you don't show up, then you have FTA'd. That you've got continuing jurisdiction of this case. The court has continuing jurisdiction, and it's a court order. I am ordering you to appear on this date for a pretrial, visit with the prosecutor, and we'll take it from there. So that's what that means. Now, it can be a nuisance. You have summons all these people, and you've got a no-show. There are court costs you can apply there. Now, here, this is a problem in our city. Tell me if you've had this problem. In the government code, in order to be eligible to sit on the jury, this is jurisdictional, that you have got to be a resident of that municipality. I used to live in Sun City. I'm old enough, but I didn't live in Sun City. In Georgetown, Texas, which is north of Austin, they brought in a Sun City. Y'all all know what that is, the retirement home, or you've got to be older than 55. So this retirement home, I've been talking too long today. This retirement community for active adults, it's a retirement community. They're not in the home yet, but there is a home just down the street. But in the retirement community, they're pretty affluent folks, and they're active. They play golf, and I've actually played on one of their tennis teams, but I don't live in Sun City. But in order to get Sun City money, the city of Georgetown annexed like a 200-yard path. They annexed all the way through Georgetown, out Williams Drive, 6 miles. So the city limits went through in this 200-yard strip to connect to Sun City so they could have the subdivision regulations and zoning and all that. So impaneling the jury there, I lived in one of those neighborhoods where it went through. You don't know if you're in the city limits or not. Any of you have that issue with your city? You're small, you're rural, and where does this field become the city limits and when doesn't it? That's come up, and people have been summoned, and we find out they're not in the city limits. So to be eligible to serve, you've got to be in the city. For those of you with wiggly maps, you know, pay special attention to that. So how does it start? It starts with the writ of venire. And as clerks, you can't sign it. If you've got a part-time judge, you're going to have to call him in, call her in to sign the writ of venire. This is a random selection of the jury panel you're going to bring in. Now, I ask El Paso, they've got a company that selects these from their voter registration. How else do y'all get, where else can you get your pool of prospective jurors?
You get ours from the tax assessor collector.
Tax assessor collector, okay, so they can probably narrow the field. Are they in the city limits there? All right, anybody else? Utility records? Okay, those are the three main sources. Tax records, voter registration, utility records. You have any problem with utility records when you call juries? Sometimes you've got landlords, the utilities are in their name. Sometimes they're dead. They are disqualified if they're dead. They cannot do it. With voter registration, we've had trouble with it being current. They may be registered there, but they've moved. I'm finding that voter registration is not that up to date. Also have trouble with, are they in the city limits? So voter registration is a tool, and utilities, it may be an address. You're sending it to, the records are in this person's name, but they don't live there, or their children live there. Tax assessor collectors, you don't have any way of knowing when you get that property record, is this the owner? Is there a tenant? Who is actually living there? But we manage. Do you have to use one of these means? Are there other means out there you can use? Take them off the street. Yes, ma'am. There's a pickup jury. You can take them off the street. You can, I've heard some cities using phone books. Now, what we have to do is make sure we're getting a random sampling. We cannot go to the Republican women meeting and pass out summons. You know, we need a jury of your peers to be summoned, and so we have to have balanced pool of jurors coming. Okay, so I think we've addressed all these driver's license records. The clerks I have talked to that have used this method, it has not been very successful. But that is a source that you can go to. Utility billing, a combination thereof, the phone book, as long as it's random, turn the page, point, send out the summons. So you've got, and we've got all these materials, all these forms are in the back of the PowerPoint, but you're going to send out a jury questionnaire requesting certain personal information. This may be offensive to some. It's none of your business what religion I am or my marital status, etc. But you do send out this information, and this is to weed out those that, and weed out is not the word I really mean, but we're going to cull disqualified voters. Are they in the city limits? Different disqualifications. Do they want to claim an exemption? You want to get that out 3 to 4 weeks ahead of time. People need to schedule. You want to make sure that you get that message. You're going to get some returned notices, or they're going to come back to you. And so then you'll know, oh, I summons 30, 40, 200, and I've gotten too many back. I need to get more folks. I've got the model jury questionnaire in the materials that you want to take a look at. So you've sent out your writ of venire. What are you going to do in the meantime? Now, this practice varies court to court. And some clerks are going to review the case file. If you haven't prepared a complaint, and you know the law now is that if they fail to appear, you've got to get a complaint on record. You need to file a complaint. So check that out. Whose job is it to prepare the complaint? Everybody here prepare the complaints? It's a prosecutor's job. It's a prosecutor's job, and if the prosecutor says, but the fact of the matter is that in most courts it is, you've got your ticket writers now, you've got your software, so I think that's contributed to a shifting of the role, but the responsibility is your prosecutor's. So you're going to make sure that the defendant and the prosecutor have a copy of this complaint. Now, some of you, who keeps a separate file for the prosecutor and a separate file for the court? Any of you do that? One? Okay. And what city? Tell me again. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. Now, keeping one for the defendant, a defendant is entitled to discovery, so if there are reports out there, but that's a good idea. You want to have a separate file for your prosecutor, for your court, because you might have discovery in there. You might have police reports. Is your judge supposed to see those? No. So maintaining a separate file is a good idea. Just have some system in place where if your judge picks this up, he's not... And I have seen that where I see something I'm not supposed to see. But you want to make sure that your videotapes, whatever discovery your prosecutor needs, and this is your practice. This is how you want to administer it in your court. So there's nothing in cement.
Is it our responsibility to send a copy of the complaint to the defendant's lawyer or the defendant?
The court. It's the court's responsibility. and it needs to be, they can insist that they get it, they can waive the right. If you get someone calling you on it, and this is something that it may be waived, but if the defendant shows up, and this is a technique that some defense attorneys use in big cities, they go in and say, well, where's my complaint? Oh, well, we amended the complaint. Here it is. I don't have one day's notice on this. Sorry, reset. You might get your prosecutor to negotiate a little more at this point. They don't want to deal with it. But you do have to have one day's notice that can be waived by the defendant. So meanwhile, you've sent out your writ of denier, and you are preparing. It's more work for a jury. You may have to summons witnesses, send out subpoenas. Okay, what happens if they don't come? Oh, no, I'm ahead of myself. So you've sent out these summons, and the person can't come. They're out of the state. They can request a postponement. But I'm going to I've written this down in my notes here. I've cited the statute. If they're going to request a postponement or exemption, they have to, let's see if I can read my own writing. They have to, where's number one? Man, I was up late. They have to have not requested a postponement for a year. So if you've got you know how some people, they get summons for juries a lot more often than other? My son, my 27-year-old, child number two, keeps getting summoned for federal court in Waco. No one else in our family has ever been summoned for federal jury duty. And he doesn't live there, so they've got the wrong address. I've told him about it. He hasn't been cited for contempt for not showing. But I swear, every 6 months he gets summoned. So if you've got someone who they can't have requested a postponement for a year, and then before they get that postponement, they have worked with you to set up another date that works better. Now, as a practical matter, for those of us in smaller courts, that date is to be determined. But they can, pursuant to, this is a statute you're going to use, they can call you, they can write and request a postponement. Here we go. If they give you false information, they claim an exemption they're not entitled to, they request an excuse and that it's not accurate, they are subject to contempt. Has anybody done that? I find few courts have. Now, it does happen. You start in a small town. If you're not getting good response, you talk to your judge. They can be subject to a fine and found in contempt of court for giving false information or requesting an excuse. In a small town, you can find out these things. All right, so now we're going to move a little bit ahead to, so you've got your panel. You've set your court date, and you've got your folks appearing. There's special sections that apply to hearing impaired pool of jurors. If you've got someone who is hearing impaired, they're not disqualified. Now, your judge may want to, if they're found unfit to serve in this particular case, your judge may disqualify them. But if a juror notifies a clerk, says, I am hearing impaired, then what you have to do is it doesn't have to be a court-appointed interpreter. But you have to accommodate this person under American with Disabilities Act. You've got to have someone there that can translate or provide other equipment depending on the nature of the impairment that will help this juror serve. So the thing I want you to remember is if you've got a deaf, hearing impaired juror, that is not an automatic disqualification. All right, you've got your jury pool sitting there. And you hopefully you've gotten responses from the pool. So those that claim exemptions, then they can be excused if you're over, what is it, 65? 70? Okay. Those are listed in your materials. If they've claimed exemptions, then they don't have to appear if they've gotten it to you before the court date. When they come to court, invariably there are some that are entitled to exemptions. We've got a new law in place this year. Used to be a person could claim an exemption if they were caring for someone under the age of 10 and younger. They've got a child that they're caring for. Well, it turns out that it's an offense in the state of Texas if you have got a child 15 or younger that you're responsible for caring for, and if you leave them alone or unattended, that's a penal code offense. So someone realized, here we've got, we're requiring this juror to be here with a 12-year-old, but it's an offense if this juror leaves this kid unattended. So the law's been changed. Now, if you've got, your juror can claim an exemption if they're caring for someone 15 and younger.
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what the law says. Now, if they can't read or write, you don't have to disqualify them, and you can provide accommodations, but they can be disqualified. So, yeah, we have problems. What about, well, you can claim an exemption for being over 70, but if you're talking about a jury of your peers and you live in Sun City, then you may want some over 70-year-old folks. But those are the statutes we're dealing with. Okay, so again, this is I'm following Hilda back and forth. She's going through her actual steps, and I sort of read it through the statutes. Excuse letters. So you've got your jury pool that's going to show up, and they are going to need to take something back to work to show that, to excuse them. An employer cannot penalize a worker for attending jury service. So you want to get those excuse letters prepared, and so when they're leaving, they'll have those available. Now, they're going to come in, they're going to turn in their juror information forms. You've got to get copies to your prosecutor, to your defense attorney, and the judge, because they're going to use those in their voir dire. They're going to go over and say, well, how many you're related to someone in law enforcement, your defense attorney, prosecutor, they're going to want to know that. So you're going to make copies to hand out to the officers of the court. List of jurors. All right, they're going to come in, they're going to sign in, and those that have requested exemptions are going to be eliminated from the pool. You've got to get, in addition to the jury questionnaires, you've got to get your list, the names, and then seat them in order. You need some sort of method where they can keep, the court can keep track of who is sitting where, and you're going to have your jury information sheet. The numbers correspond with their numbers and where they're sitting. Different courts use different methods depending on the layout of your court. Preparing a verdict form. Now, this is, again, just getting everything ready because you're going to have some documents here that you're not going to have for a trial before the court. But prepare a verdict form. And then on final draft, you expect to come in. Well, I guess what Hilda does, she's very detailed. She gets her list together. And then, now if you've prepared a final list, but they don't show up for court that day, you're going to have to revise it. Let me check my notes here. We're getting there. trial day, have final draft. Okay, so trial day. They're going to come in. They're going to sign in, assign a seat, as I mentioned before. Give them another information handout, a jury handbook. That is in, I've got a model jury handbook. The in your materials that was prepared by the Office of Court Administration. So that's a good one to use. Just give them this jury information book and handout for them to prepare. Hilda is very detailed. Make sure they're sitting properly. Okay. You can have a challenge to the array. Now, I haven't seen that very often. What a challenge to the array means is that the person, either the prosecutor or defense, is claiming that you, the officer, willfully summons these folks with a view to securing an acquittal or a conviction. So if you were at the Republican women's meeting, and I don't mean to pick up there, but if you're at that meeting and that's where you're summoning your folks, maybe one side or the other will say, now, I suspect that this is a tainted jury pool. They can only make one challenge to the array. This is something that lawyers should know. Your pro se defendants may not. They've seen CSI or a court show, and they think that they can keep you hopping that way. One shuffle. Now, a jury shuffle can be requested one time as well. That is not a challenge to the makeup of the group, but that is, you know, this is not looking good for me. Let's mix them up. So if they request it, they're entitled to that one time. We can't play musical chairs all morning. That's not how it's going to work. But then you get to randomly reassign the juries. If it's a challenge to the array, that is saying I've got a tainted jury pool for whatever reason that is biased. And if that happens, then, yes, you would dismiss that whole pool. Your defendant's still entitled to a jury trial. It's start over time. But in the shuffle is we're just one side doesn't like the order. Let's see if I can do better. All right, so you've got to administer the oath. You can do that. Your judge can do it. Somebody has to do it. Swear to tell the truth and answer questions to the best of my knowledge. I can't recite it right now, but you have to swear in your jury panel. And then we're getting to voir dire. So that is where the parties, the prosecutor, defense attorney, has they're going to ask your jurors question. Hopefully that they're on top of that. Pro se defendants can sometimes get out of whack that they've seen too much court TV, whatever. But in municipal court, we've got a jury of six. Each side gets three peremptory challenges. So once they've voir dired, are you related to anyone in law enforcement? Have you ever gotten a speeding ticket? Do you think that you've ever been unfairly cited for a traffic offense? Those are things that your parties are going to want to know. So then they're going to make their strikes. What you've got to do at that point, reprint your list, giving them the jurors that have survived, gone through the gauntlet. Who gets to dismiss them?
Yeah, if they're given the voir dire and their question, and it turns out that they say, you know, I think everybody should be killed for that.
Right. Okay.
Who dismisses them? Is it?
We've got two types of strikes that you can make. And good point. You can strike for cause. If you've got a juror that says, I don't care what the evidence says, I think that having a cell phone in the car, for, you know, any example, that I am so biased in favor of this law, or I'm a mad proponent, that I cannot sit fairly. And you'll have folks tell you that my child was involved in an accident. It was very traumatic. And I don't think I can sit here and listen to a case with an alcohol DUI. So the judge in that instance is going to call the juror up. Hopefully they don't do it in the panel because they ask him, have you been convicted of theft or any a crime involving moral turpitude? I think it's a better practice to bring them up, talk before the judge. They don't have to share whatever detail. This is not a for cause, but I had one lady who had Crohn's disease, which, you know, is an intestinal disorder, and she had to go to the bathroom every couple minutes, and it was embarrassing. She didn't want to share that with everybody. But back to strike for cause. If the judge is going to talk to this juror, can you fairly follow the law? It doesn't matter if you think that speeding is just a method for the state to collect money and it shouldn't be criminal. Can you follow the law? The judge is going to ask him that. There's an unlimited number. There is no limit on the number of folks that can be struck for cause. And that isn't going to go against your peremptory strikes. So you have the people, and you've hopefully flushed them out in voir dire. The judge is the one that's going to excuse them for cause. In fact, only the judge can. So, yes, the judge strikes for cause, and then you're going to go through your voir dire process. Where am I? All right. So you've got to keep these juror information sheets. This, for those of you who haven't done one, you would think that, okay, they've done their service, they're going. You've got to keep these. The Records Retention Act requires you to keep these for a year. All right. Follow me now. We're bouncing around. All right. You've got to keep these records. Next one. You've administered one oath already. The judge will administer an oath to the jurors. All right, you're going to keep up with meanwhile, you are keeping up with a lot of documents. You've got to, hopefully your prosecutor has reviewed the charge to the jury. Now the charge, we've got a bank of charges that we're starting with TMCEC. If you're not used to doing jury trials and you get an assault charge or whatever offense that you have in your court, the judge has to give the jury instructions that this is the law. You are the finder of fact. If there's an issue of law that comes up, I, the judge, am going to make that determination. But you, the jury, are the finder of facts. The weight to be given any evidence, the credibility of that evidence. So you may have, we've got one witness on a speeding, and it's the officer. This juror may decide that there are factors weighing against the credibility of this officer. So that's what's in the charge. Now, your judge, if he's part-time, if she's hasn't done a jury trial, may say, where do I get a charge? That falls on you to say, oh, I'm going to find a charge. You can call us, look on the website. We do have model charges for you. Ask your fellow clerks in neighboring cities what they use. Now here is our $3 court cost. The jury court cost, you can assess a $3 charge. If they have requested a jury and they don't show up, they don't give you enough notice, they plea out, you can still assess this court charge. They haven't given you enough notice. One $3 charge. It doesn't pay for your paper, but, you know, it's there. Okay, this is one thing. We're getting close to time, but this is an area of confusion. It's specific to municipal courts. The statutes say that jurors are entitled to being reimbursed. It's we're not going to have professional jurors. They don't pay them that much. But there's an exemption for municipal courts. We do not have to pay our jurors. Statutorily, there's no requirement that we have to pay them. Now, your city can pass an ordinance saying that we want to reimburse jurors. I mean, we're collecting a juror reimbursement court cost, but we don't, you know, it's not doing us any good. So your city may elect. What about El Paso? Did they pay their jurors? Okay. $6? Down? Oh, wow. Okay. Big city, big courts, a lot of volume. Now, I suspect most of us don't have, I know in Liberty Hill, and it's in your court materials, there's a nice certificate of appreciation that you may want to, thanking them for their service. All right, you're going to process your payments again. This is if you're paying your jurors. I know some courts, the processing of the money, the giving checks out was such a headache. They didn't want to fool with cash. They stopped paying their jurors. All right, we've had the trial. We have scraped enough jurors together. Your judge will determine if they're going to hold the persons that didn't appear in contempt. Okay, summons jurors, reschedule. We've been over rescheduling them. Again, the judge has to assess contempt. All right, this is what I wanted to, I've got a couple points I want to finish up with. You can't throw this juror information stuff away. The Records Retention Act requires you to keep it for a year. It's also, you can't disclose this information. This information they share with you is confidential. So keep that in mind. It's confidential, and you've got to hold on to it. You have the juror information handbook, the model one, in your materials. It's also available online. We've got these forms that you're going to use. If you look in the forms book, everybody familiar with the forms book? It's on our website, or we'll be glad to sell you a hard copy. There's a chapter on jury trials. In the bench book, there's a blow-by-blow. When you get this jury trial set, it's going to walk you and your judge through it, network with other courts. Okay, there's one other thing I wanted to bring up. And you all, where do you get your jurors? We, as I mentioned, in our small town, we have been through everybody several times. We had a lot of problems with wrong addresses. They are utility. We don't have a utilities. They're not city utilities. So getting the right people in has been a problem. And we have done a pickup jury. So small cities, keep this in mind. We've gone across the street and sent the bailiff over. And the bailiff will summon someone right there on the spot at the post office or at Parker's Corner Store. And they have been summoned to jury duty. So that is a technique that it's a tool that you've got, and we have used it. We have had, in my last one, I'm no longer the judge in Liberty Hill, but I had like 40 people show up, 100% of compliance and response, and the defendant stood them up. And then the next one, I had the defendants there ready to go. It was a CDL driver, so, you know, this driver had to push it. He couldn't get deferred. And I had 6 in the panel. Well, now, what's the minimum number you have to have for the jury? But each side is entitled to the 3 parentis strikes. Generally, that's a good number, 50 to 60. I think a minimum 30 when you are sending out the writ, a minimum of 30. El Paso, where you've got many courts, many cases set in one day, we have actually used a juror in 2 trials. We've had so few. It's not a good practice. Do you do that? I mean, with a big panel, you don't have to. It's not a good practice, but sometimes you have to do it. Did you have a question?
That was my question. So each child is on Monday, 3 minutes on Monday. You need to have a set jury for each.
Right. You'll have a separate jury for each defendant. Now, again, you don't want the practice of having one juror sit on three trials is not ideal. It's not prohibited. But you want to get enough people in. And each defendant, you know, you've run your jury panel, your jury pool through one set of voir dire. You get your next defendant and prosecutor in, they get voir dired again. So it's the same process, but a minimum of 30. If you've got 1 to 2 to 3 cases set, I think 50 is a good number. If you've got a bunch of cases set, haul everybody in. And your experience is going to dictate that. This was too many. This was unmanageable. I need more. So thanks. Thank you for your attention this afternoon. I hope we can go someplace cool now. I've got, take a look at the course materials, and I will be here if you've got additional questions, but share stories with each other. You're your best resource. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, anybody going out to dinner someplace good? Where are we going to need to go?
You can decide that after a couple beers.
Couple beers, all right. There you go.